present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Sunday Times travel section read by Rory Morrison.
The only captive-bred panda to be released into the wild has disappeared in China. Experts believe Zhang Zhang was hurt in a brawl with a rival, and vets hope to find him in time to treat his injuries, which apparently include two black eyes.
And our thanks to Roger Macklin for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Andy Hamilton. And opposite them on my left, Jeremy Hardy and Alan Corran. Right, Francis, whose latest policy is surging on the ridiculous?
It's Bush and Blair have, I think, had a slight parting of the ways over Iraq. Because Blair is about to announce that he's withdrawing 3,000 British troops by May. Whereas Bush announced this week that he thinks the best way to withdraw from Iraq is to send another 21,000 troops into Iraq. And it's called a troop surge. It's some strategic phrase. They go surging in, and then there's a lot of mayhem, and they go surging out again. Some of them still alive.
Do you think he sets himself a limit? Do you know, like when people say, if you go to a casino, always set yourself a limit? Another 20,000, and when they're all killed, that's it, I'm out.
I was in America last week, and the awful truth is that no Americans trust him or believe him. So I think he's now reached this awful position for a politician where he's realised that it's actually pointless lying to the American people, so now he just lies to himself.
The other thing is that Bush has, everyone says, oh, Bush is a complete moron, which he probably is, but he's got degrees from both Yale and Harvard universities, and fat lot of good.
I once tried to find out what his educational qualifications were, and on his website it says that Mr. President graduated in the top 84% of his class at Yale. That'll be 16% from the bottom.
I think it was a different Yale. I think he went somewhere to learn how to cut keys.
The thing is, with your CV, though, if you've got President of the United States at the top, they're not going to go all the way down the bottom. But Blair, I'm glad that Blair has finally joined in with the condemnation of the manner of Saddam's execution. Even the Tories have pitched in, but it's the manner of, you know, if he'd been humanely strangled by vegans, that would...
What are they saying now? They're going to try and be more humane, that the soldiers now, when they go round in sort of Baghdad and places, they've got to knock on the door first. It must be the only time the doorbell rings and you think, I hope that that is a Jehovah's Witness. The answer is George Bush has announced his plans to end violence in Baghdad. He's sending in another 20,000 heavily armed American troops. Bush delivered his address to the nation. It took him 20 minutes because he kept stumbling over the zip code. So, 2 points to Francis. Extra bonus point. Anybody know what it's the 5th anniversary of this week?
Difficult. Was it the decision to go to war?
No.
Open of the Blue Water Estate at Runcorn?
Yeah. It's extremely similar. It's the 5th anniversary of Guantanamo Bay.
I forgot to send a card.
And the camp in Cuba still houses nearly 400 prisoners, also has a special chalet where John Reed likes to get away from it all in the summer. So 1 point to me, I think, because I knew the answer to that one.
Right. I thought Barry Manilow put the camp in Cuba.
It's terribly pleasing. Right. Andy, why isn't Mother Kelly so keen on the schools on her doorstep?
This is a frustrating story. I have so many reasons to dislike Ruth Kelly.
Oh, come on, with her rugged good looks.
But I've so many reasons to dislike her, but sadly, I don't think this is one of them, because it's one of those rather bewildering stories, because I don't actually know the exact nature of the problem of the child in question. And
this
isn't
question time.
I know, but I just don't feel comfortable. I don't know what advice she received. The only thing I would say is that she had nothing to be ashamed of, then why did she act like she did in trying to keep it secret and trying to sort of ban people from talking about it? I presume that's a reflex now, with all politicians anyway, that you just cover up regardless.
We all know that mothers will do anything for their sons. Daughters not so much. But a mother will do anything to protect her son, which is why flashers always have an alibi. They can always say, I was in all evening, and their mum will back it up. Oh, my boy wouldn't do that.
How do you know that?
Well, because... anyway...
How is Mrs. Hardy?
I'm nervous of this notion that your children's opportunities must always be put ahead of your principles. Because you think, well, there are other children in the world, and how far are you prepared to go to clear a path for your child? And when do you start? And your child will be quickest to the top of the slide if you pick off the fat kids with a crossbow.
It's that darling of the news quiz, Ruth Kelly. Who has inveigled herself into round one this week by deciding to send her child to a private school rather than using the state facilities which she, as a former education minister, used to be responsible for. 2 points to Andy. Jeremy, have a listen to this. Jeremy, whose blue entertaining has really paid off?
Is this Tory Dinners? Mm. Tory Dinners sounds like a weird reality show presented by Anthony Worrell Thompson, but it's worse than that. It's, you pay £5,000 and you have dinner with a load of Tories. Now, the £5,000, you think, well, all right, if it was a really nice meal, wines included, wild Irish smoked salmon with wheaten bread, nice bottle of Sancerre, maybe £5,000, but with Tories, no, sorry. I wouldn't have dinner with Cameron if I won it in a raffle. £5,000. For £5,000, I'd want dinner with Johnny Cash. I mean, who in their right mind wants to spend £5,000 to have... I mean,
so they made a big deal out of it that they had for these dinners, and there was a special menu for people with an intolerance, and surely that's a description of any Tory.
Oh, that's how they're raising money. They're now fantastically wealthy.
They've got a war chest. I mean, they could invade Iraq separately if they wanted to.
So there were lots of idiots who were prepared to pay.
Yeah, they're making a fortune.
To answer your question, who are these people? Mm.
Very hungry people who don't realise you can go to Wimpy and for £5.99 get something that at least sustaining.
It must make it easy to organise, though. You just put out 40 place cards that say git on them. Yes, the Tories have built up a £21 million war chest to fight the next election, thanks in part to a series of expensive dinner parties with David Cameron. 2 points to Jeremy. Alan, who is quite obviously not fit for purpose?
So he created the phrase, poor sod, didn't he, and he's now come back to hang him. This is the nature of politics. This is John Reid's lot, the Home Office. Very carefully saw to it that 27,000 Britons... according to Daily Mail, all of them paedophiliac murderers abroad, were pulled in by various police forces. The files were then sent back to the Home Office, and the Home Office acted the way the Home Office does and put them under a chamber pot on the ground floor where they gathered dust and the detritus of incontinent Home Office specialists and suddenly turned up last week. And they're now out, as we say, in the community, and the Home Office has no record of them at all, which is on the cards because the Home Office has no records of anybody who comes into this country or their files.
These are PDF files that they've lost, presumably, aren't they?
But as I understand it, the filing system they were using was putting all the files in a cardboard box and then ignoring it. Now, I recognise this filing system. It's actually very successful. I've used it all my life. It's a good system because, you know, it doesn't create too much work.
Well, they referred to it as a backlog of unprocessed material, which is a really horrible phrase. Sounds like the sort of thing you feel the morning after a late night kebab. This backlog of unprocessed. But the real lesson of this, apart from that ridiculous woman Joan Ryan, of whom none of us had ever heard until this week, who went on the radio saying, well, I knew nothing about it to the best of my knowledge. But Reid, my one aim in life is to persuade people with PhDs not to call themselves doctor because they always seem terribly dangerous. Dr. Ian Paisley, Dr. Yeah. Henry Kissinger, Dr. John Reid, Dr. Gillian McKeith. She knows a thing or two about backlogs of unprocessed material.
Going back to Alan's thing about the jargon, the not fit for purpose, I think the first time that ever appeared was on NVQ forms. It just means doesn't work. It's like best practice. Well, that just means doing things properly. I hate all that. And the jargon I really hate is vertically challenged. Well, for obvious reasons. But mainly because it suggests that actually that's not a finished state. That, you know, it's a challenge. But you could do something about it if you really... I mean, I know, I'm not vertically challenged. I'm vertically defeated.
Home Secretary John Reid admitted there is a serious problem after hundreds of criminals convicted abroad were left off the police national computer because their details were never passed on by the Home Office. Apparently, the relevant files were ignored because they were stored in an office where John Reid keeps his charm, compassion and liberal tendencies. And at the end of round one, both teams have got 4 points. Now we start round two with a listing from the classified section of the Lancaster and South Cumbria phone book.
Boring. See civil engineers.
And our thanks to Anne Armand for spotting that. Francis, why is this week the most popular amongst couples for a winter break?
People went back to work on Monday this week. Some people had taken about a month off for Christmas, as is their wont, and came back and got divorced. It is that time of year. Just having a sort of a New Year clear out, and you clear out your spouse while you're about it, having emptied your shed.
Do you keep your wife in the shed?
You'd be amazed if you find my shed. But no, I didn't actually get divorced last week, oddly enough. But everyone does, because they hate one another over Christmas. They all have rows.
I also think what you find in your Christmas pillowcase is a sort of good indicator. I mean, if you find jewellery, that's a good sign. If you wake up and you find it being held over your face, that's probably a bad thing.
Is it pillowcases now? I thought it was stockings. What, are you in the Ku Klux Klan or something?
I didn't like to say. It's a strange little gay branch of the Ku Klux Klan.
Pink's a lot less menacing, isn't it?
Burn people's homes because of their curtains. That's
incredibly niche activist group.
I've got a vague memory of answering a question like this where some study or other said that the period after the summer holidays was the worst for divorce. You spend time together and you suddenly realise, oh, I hate this person.
Someone's just walked out.
That's the head of Radio 4, that.
Deeply offensive divorce joke.
Now, that was the pink Ku Klux Klan joke. Oh, that. He's gone to ring the membership. They're on to us. Cancel tonight's meeting.
Oh, and after those nice invitations. Now, apparently Monday was the busiest day of the year for divorce lawyers, with research by website insidedivorce.com finding that more marriages disintegrate this week than at any other time. I think marriage is great. I do. I think how lovely to find one special person that you want to annoy for the rest of your life.
What it is, I reckon, is the number of women who say, let's not give each other presents this year, and the man falls for it.
2 points to Francis. Andy, why could the Lincolnshire coast be the next hot holiday destination?
Oh, this is about Skegness becoming the new Antibes. Mm-hmm. I'm just quoting from a headline. This is because the weather's gone haywire all over the world. As I mentioned earlier, I was in America last week. They are completely obsessed with their weather. They've got hot summer temperatures in New York. People are out sunbathing. They got 2 feet of snow in Colorado.
Andy, what? The fact that we're only just out of the Christmas holidays doesn't mean you can just tell people what you did in your break.
Well... hang on, look, I've got the pictures with me and everything.
Excellent.
But they were obsessed. They've got a whole channel devoted to the weather over there, and their weather's gone haywire, our weather's haywire. And apparently, Britain is going to become a great holiday destination, probably on the basis that we might be the only survivable place on the planet, in which case the boarding houses are going to be very crowded. I think some of the landladies will have to relax their rules, rather.
Landladies?
Yeah.
What kind of world do you live in? And why, if it gets warmer, will Lincolnshire be a good place to be? Because Lincolnshire is about the lowest places. It's the fens. The boarding houses will only have parts of the roof.
that are habitable.
Well, there'll be sailing holidays in in Lincoln.
Surfing.
You know, once around the cathedral.
It is quite Mediterranean, the East Coast. I went to Cromer in Norfolk.
Where oh, don't tell us about your holidays.
Cromer. Working.
I was working.
I went to a tea shop in Cromer and it said, open Friday to Monday, weather permitted. And then it said, no babies or small children. And I thought, welcome to bloody Britain.
Skegness could one day become Europe's top holiday destination after the European Commission forecasts that unbearably hot summers could drive tourists away from the Mediterranean and towards a new northern Riviera. This is absolutely true. The statutory spokesman for Skegness District Council praised its merits by saying, we have some of the best beach donkeys in the country. Jeremy, why do the Lords think the religious should show a little less discrimination?
Well, there was a vote on a piece of legislation banning discrimination against gay people, and lots of fundamentalist Christians turned up at the House of Lords campaigning for their right to discriminate against gays, which seems a bit odd, really. For churches to discriminate against gays is a bit like synagogues discriminating against rabbis, really. I was a bit baffled by the whole thing, really, because they said, well, we've got a right to discriminate against gays on a religious basis. And you think, well, what if you're a secular bigot? Can you say, no, I don't believe in God, I'm just horrible? And it's been likened to racism. They say, no, it's different because it's about God's objection to homosexuals because it's not about procreation. And you think, well, who's God to criticise gay people as regards their child-producing skills? God only had one child. He wasn't much involved in his upbringing. Not only was he absent from the birth, he was absent from the conception. How must it feel to have a dad who's omnipresent but never there for you? I was thinking, well, if people say, oh, well, I want to be allowed to do something discriminatory and bigoted on the basis of my faith, then you think, well, where does that stop?
So it's that landlord in Scotland who said he won't provide a double bed for homosexuals, but if they checked in, they could have two single beds. And he was then hammered by his local authority.
Do you think he's worked out the gays can walk across the room? Is he?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I've never stayed in a Christian B&B. You're a weirdo. Do you want toast or Body of Christ? Where are these Christian guest houses that you can stay in? Where
YMCA.
Well,
it is the House of Lords' decision to uphold the Sexual Orientation Bill already in effect in Northern Ireland, which outlaws discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, despite loud protests from religious groups and Lord Tebbit. Every now and then I forget about Lord Tebbit, and then he sort of renews your faith in the far right, doesn't he? Cuddly and fluffy in his hatred of somebody. At the end of round two, Francis and Andy have got 9 points, and so have Alan and Jeremy. Before we start round three, here is a report of the WIAGM from The Villager, the Sherbournes and Pamba.
A long-time member and dear friend, Mrs. Joy Tipping, died at the beginning of the year and has been greatly missed. She served on the committee for many years in various positions and was always a willing helper at any social or charity function. We've named a brick at Denham College in her honour.
Thanks to Alan Albrey, who sent that in. Francis, what offshore investment could fetch a princely sum?
Oh, it's a place called Sealand, I think, which I thought was somewhere in Southend, one of those big aquariums, but it's actually off the coast of Essex. It's like a small oil rig that time forgot, and somebody lives there.
It's a kingdom, isn't it?
It's a kingdom, because it's 7 miles off the coast. It's a separate country. It's the smallest country on Earth, and they have their own stamps and passports and things. And it's run by a chap who calls himself Prince Michael. But it sounds most unappealing. It's just a windswept little oil rig in the North Sea, and he wants millions for it.
It's a fort. Not an oil rig, it's a fort.
Harry. It does get invaded every so often, though. Apparently the Danes and the Germans invaded it some years ago.
Well, we've not a lot to do.
That was wussy Danes. He just thought we'd take that place. It's only got two people living there.
Yeah, go on, easy.
They're not the Vikings they were, are they?
Actually, I found the Sealand National Anthem. It's got five verses, the first of which goes, We offer no apology for Sealand ideology. We will provide technology unbound by censorship, both financial cryptography and good wholesome pornography. Thanks to unique geography, we'll give the feds the slip. I feel I could stand and sing that with a tear in my eye.
Isn't that from Gilbert and Sullivan?
Now, the world's smallest country, Sealand, a steel platform perched on top of two concrete towers. It's actually a former World War II army fort, 7 miles off the coast of Harwich, and with a population of less than 10, is up for sale. Sealand has its own flag, currency, and passports. Take that, Scotland. Andy, why shouldn't you turn your nose up at finding your way back home?
I've got a photo of an alligator here.
I know this.
Oh, go on then.
It's a fish.
Did you hear about it in Cromer?
It's. they don't have fish in Cromer. It's a myth. But the cardinal fish, which sounds like somebody whose job is covering up child abuse, but actually, a cardinal fish. It's an Australian fish, and that was an accent then. And what it can find. The exact spot where it was hatched by smell, which you think, well, fish are quite stinky, that's not such a surprise, but even among all the other fish that have laid their eggs in that area, it can go back to the exact spot where it was hatched, which makes you think that hatching must be a particularly stinky process. And when you come out of your egg, you go around all the other eggs saying, I'd leave it a few minutes if I were you. I'd stay in there for a bit, let it clear.
Imagine kippers could find their way home, especially if their parents smoked.
Bit of a job. Job for a kipper, though. Once you've taken its, if it was a John West kipper, you've taken its head and tail off, flattened it, taken its spine out, said, all right, go and find your way home. It's not lassie, is it?
Yeah, but some of these animal liberationists aren't that bright, Alan. You've got to pay that.
Scientists have discovered a fish species on the Great Barrier Reef that can sniff its way back to the patch of reef where it hatched. The cardinal fish, spiny damselfish, and the neon damselfish can detect odours from their patch of reef up to 30 miles away. Some say it's a marvel of nature, and I say it's time to change their sheets. Jeremy, why is the phone the apple of Apple's eye?
Oh, because there's a new thing that does a thing. It's a computer that you can, it's a computer that you can use as an apple. It's got more than one use. It's a wrench that you can use as a trouser press. Yeah, it's the iPhone. iPhone. It's not as dramatic as I, Claudius, somehow, is it?
Not as dramatic as a Swiss Army phone that I have.
It's the launch of the iPhone, Apple Computer's new all-singing, all-dancing touchscreen phone, which has been sending geeks to their silicon nirvana this week. I think if you ask the average woman what she wants from a phone, she wants it to be able to make phone calls, she wants a handy alarm.
She wants it to vibrate a bit, like those phones. I had one of those. It really brought the roses to my cheeks. I mind Mrs. bought me one of these, put it in my pocket. She rang me up. It's wonderful. I left her soon afterwards for the phone.
Well, actually, the new iPhone has got a touch screen, and you turn it on by simply stroking it lightly with a finger. That's something that both you boys might think about. Two points to Jeremy. Alan, I don't know if I have the nerve to ask you this. How have Germans caused a brouhaha?
It'll be about beer.
No, not quite.
It's about the German research into tea, isn't it?
It is.
Was
saying
about
that black
tea
is good for you, but if you put
white
milk
tea
in,
is bad.
Mm. Yeah. The milk, the proteins in the milk block.
Wasn't this study also bollocks, to put it at its kind of, because it didn't read as very scientific to me. Apparently, the proteins, the black tea in theory relaxes your arteries. I don't know how it does that. Maybe it massages them or something, makes them do Pilates.
Vibrates.
And then the horrid milk comes along and shoos all that away, and the arteries end up all stiff and tense again. And I mean, obviously, you know, I'm cutting out a lot of the scientific detail. I don't want to bamboozle people.
Yes, it's the new food health scare after the unexpected polonium in sushi debacle. Research by German scientists has found that adding milk to tea can neutralise its healthy properties. Apparently German boffins haven't caused this much uproar since they proved scientifically that all the sun loungers are theirs. German sun lounger, guaranteed laugh. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings that the teams have brought along. Mr. Ween.
Sandy, this is from The Independent. It's a story about our dear old friend Ruth Kelly, who is Communities Secretary, I think, these days. And this is some new proposals to shake up local councils that she announced. One of the most important proposals is giving local authorities the right to pass bylaws to protect public spaces, prevent litter, set aside certain areas for activities like skateboarding, or impose rules about where it is permissible to ride horses or fish.
Andy.
This is from Peter Hobday. He says it's from his local rag, the Romford Recorder, and he adds, I assure you, I have not made it up. And it's from the advice column, and it's one of the letters. It reads as follows. I loved a boy, and my mates all said he was a player. He said he wasn't, but then he dumped me. Then I heard he was going out with someone else, so I texted her that she was a slag. Then my ex texted me that he would punch my face. So I texted, come and do it then, I'll be in the park. So he came but said she was a slag and that she'd made him write that text. Then he said give him a BJ in the bushes, so I did. But then he texted to say rubbish oral and FO. But I want him back.
Jeremy.
This was sent in by Barbara Conrad in Solihull. It's an unsolicited approval of this free sheet. And it says, good response to the ad I placed. I could have sold my stalls four times over. Sent in by Dr. Gillian McKeith.
Alan.
I'd like to dedicate mine to George Bush in this week of weeks, because it's from an advert in Tuesday's Daily Mail. It said, bring your kids up to date for the new year with this superb colour-printed inflatable globe showing the world in 2007. Can be blown up in seconds.
Thank you. Now let's take a look at the final score. Francis and Andy have got 13, but this week's winners are Alan and Jeremy with 14 points. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Brighton Evening Argus sent in by Robert Cook.
Suicides at Beachy Head fell during 2006.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Ween, Andy Hamilton, Jeremy Hardy and Alan Cole. In the chair was Sandy Toxwood, and the news was read by me, Rory Morrison. The chair script was written by Simon Littlefield, Roderick Crooks and George Poles, and the producer was Katie Tyrrell.